to Build, Lead, Thrive, Voices of Androscoggin. Today's guest has been leading in healthcare for decades, through mergers, reform, a global pandemic, and now through one of the most financially turbulent times that our healthcare systems have ever faced. Dr. Stephen Littleson is the president and CEO of Central Maine Healthcare, president of Central Maine Medical Center. He joined CMH in 2020. That was a big year, Steve.
Sure was.
Yep, to join any hospital. He quickly found himself at the center of some of the most urgent healthcare challenges, from the COVID-19 pandemic to navigating statewide hospital system change. Prior to joining us here in Maine, he served as president, hospitals division for Hackensack Meridian Health in New Jersey. He's held senior roles at Meridian Health and Southern Ocean County Hospital, both in Jersey, as well as the, help me say this right,
Sentara
Healthcare in Virginia. That's like the most spicy healthcare system name I've ever heard.
Originally, they thought it was a bank. You know, it was back when the banks were all changing their names, so they had to spend a lot of money promoting that name.
It's a pretty fun name.
Yeah.
You also served as an officer and chairman of the boards of the New Jersey Hospital Association and the New Jersey Council of Teaching Hospitals. He served on the boards of numerous community service organizations, including Boy Scouts of America, United Way, Rotary International, American Red Cross, and Big Brothers and Big Sisters. I myself am a lifetime member of the Girl Scout movement.
Oh, love
kudos
that.
To scouting.
Yes, yes.
Anytime I see someone else with a little bit of scouts in their background, I'm like, someone knows how to tie a knot. I appreciate that. He currently serves as an adjunct faculty member at New York University's Robert F. Wagner Graduate School of Public Service. And you've been a regular guest lecturer for the Peking University Executive MBA program in Beijing, China. Just like, oh, by the way.
Yeah.
I always, with the bios in our podcast, there's always like three or four things that I'm like, you just also do this on the side?
I've been three times. The last time I took my two daughters and my wife, and they hated it. It was a long trip.
And you were working.
And I was working.
Admittedly.
And some of the accommodations weren't exactly as we know them here in the States. But over time, they've grown to appreciate it. They were in middle school at the time, so wasn't exactly on their bucket list.
Yeah.
But it was a great experience for them.
See, that's fun and wild. Locally, a little closer to home, you serve right here on the board of the LA Metro Chamber. Thanks for being on my board of directors. But also the Maine Hospital Association.
That's right. I'm actually going to be the chair of the Hospital Association board starting in June.
Yeah. Do you ever serve on a board and not go to chair?
I have, yes.
I almost never myself personally, so I like understand and really empathize with. I don't know if it's a condition that puts us in that spot, but a lot of that resonates with me.
Could be. Yeah.
It's not a bad thing. You earned your Bachelor of Arts in Business Administration from Gettysburg College, your Master of Health Administration from Milken Institute School of Public Health at the George Washington University, and your Doctor of Business Administration from Waldron University. Today, we're going to talk a little bit about what's happening with hospitals in Maine, why it matters to every one of us, not just healthcare administrators, and what it takes to lead a system through change, which is something you've been doing a lot of. Is there any chance I missed anything in that?
No,
line?
I don't think so.
Do you have any family pets?
I think you pretty well covered it. I do. I have a 14-year-old Old English sheepdog named Liberty.
Aww.
And she's 14.
Aww.
Hopefully going on 15.
Yeah.
And two daughters, grown daughters. One's married and 4 months pregnant. Lives in New York City.
Will that be your first grandchild?
Yes, it will.
Ooh.
Yeah, granddaughter, actually.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And my other daughter just got engaged. She too lives in New York City. So they're both in New York.
Aw. And that's not too far from here.
It's not. It's doable.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're Jersey girls. They grew up in New Jersey, so they live in the city and they love it.
Aw.
Yeah.
They're going to love, like, summering in Maine with
they
their grandkids.
Absolutely
like,
do.
Bring us to the lake, I'm sure.
That's right.
Oh, that lake or ocean?
Lake.
Yeah.
I live in Raymond on Panther Pond.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, see, that's what I would pick, too. Well, welcome.
Thank you.
So excited. Yeah.
Thank you.
We start with a little bit of a segment.
We do.
It's a light introduction. We used to sing this intro.
Okay.
We don't.
Until we were asked not to.
Okay, good. All right.
This is our gift back to you. We never made our guests sing, if
that's
that makes
a good
you
thing,
feel any
because it
better.
Would be the last time.
Yeah. I think that's part of why we stopped.
That's right. Our first segment is called Getting to Know You, where we ask guests fun, personality-revealing questions to help you learn about and connect with our guests on a personal level before we get into the deeper questions. This is like the appetizer before the main course.
What's something people might be surprised to learn about you outside of your title or resume? It's a little Steve Littleson.
Yeah, I spent 3 months as a patient in the hospital my senior year in high school. I was in a bad accident. I was actually a snowmobile. I grew up in upstate New York, Rochester, New York, and was in an accident on a snowmobile and almost lost my right leg. I was almost killed. I mean, we ran into the back of a parked car doing 60 miles an hour on the street. And I hit the car with my leg, not my whole body, fortunately, or I wouldn't be sitting here. But I spent 3 months in the hospital without so much as rolling over. I was in traction. Mm-hmm. So I never got out of bed. I never rolled over for 11 weeks. You know, when you're 17 years old and an athlete and you're chained to a bed for 11 weeks, it changes you.
Yeah.
And I always, even to this day, you know, reflect on that personal experience. I know what it's like, you know, to ring a call bell and not have anybody show up.
Yeah.
Or be in pain and not be able to get relief. So, you know, those were the formative years of my healthcare experience.
I spent 3 months on bed rest in a hospital once when I was pregnant with the twins, and it was a really high-risk pregnancy, and I had premature labor 3 times, I think, while I was in the hospital. It really does change you in a fundamental way.
Right.
I feel like it makes you more empathetic when you are visiting people in hospitals, when you know someone is in a hospital, the way in which you understand that experience differently than just like the pain or illness itself, but it's like the powerlessness of it.
Yeah. And, you know, the loss of dignity. You know, a 17-year-old, you know, in the hospital who can't do anything for themselves, including get a bedpan.
Yeah.
You know, so it humbles you for sure. Mm-hmm. But it strengthens you, too. I mean, I remember my friends would come in, and they knew that I was going to be there for a long time, and they would say, how can you do this? And my answer was, what choice do I have?
Yes.
What choice do I have? Thank God I'm here.
Yeah.
You know? So, we all learn to cope eventually.
Yeah. I did not know that about you.
There you go.
Yeah. Question well answered. Well, I wonder if this is linked. If you had a personal motto or mantra that keeps you steady through a challenge, what would it be? So whether it was those 11 weeks, COVID, long periods, like your doctorate.
Or even, you know, closer to home, October 25th year. And that is that we're always people taking care of people. Mm-hmm. You know, at Central Maine Healthcare, it's all about taking care of our patients and each other, our team members. We really believe that if we take care of our team members, we're going to take better care of our patients. No matter what it is or what we're going through, we always fall back to, we're going to take care of you, and we're going to take care of each other, and we're going to take care of our patients. And that's how we get through challenge.
It's so real, though, because if you're not taking care of each other, you can't do the rest of the work.
Right.
Whether it's caretaking or anything else, you really can't do it otherwise.
And I remember back, you know, after the shooting, you know, our number one priority, aside from taking care of the patients in the hospital, was taking care of the 3,200 team members. And it wasn't just the team members at Central Maine, it was the team members all across Central Maine that we employ who were affected one way or another. So that's what we fall back to. It's, you know, we got to take care of each other so we can take care of our patients and people in our community.
It's a smart way to start.
No matter what the challenge.
Yeah. You just remind me of October 25th.
Sorry.
No, I mean, you were a really present thought partner and colleague during that time. The caretaking that you were doing, very different than the caretaking I was doing. The response, very different, but
nonetheless, we were both front and center.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
And all the same, right? And the unexpectedness and the, I think that particularly in the early days after October 25th, there was this reminiscence of the early days of the pandemic when you're like, you know, things had fundamentally shifted. You know, the way that we think and act and do things are going to be different, and you have no idea when it's going to change again or when it's going to go back, but you know it's not going to go back. But like this notion of just not knowing how long you're going to be in that state for, I remember that just being so, you know, I talked about that then.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is take care of yourself and your team. Mm-hmm. So that you can just do the stuff that you're trying to do in the first place.
If we do that, everything else will take care of itself.
Yeah. And if you don't do that, nothing else will get taken care
of. Exactly.
Nothing else really matters.
Right, right.
Well, so then what's one small habit or routine that you yourself use that helps you lead well under pressure?
I show up.
Yeah.
I always show up.
You really do.
You know, I'm in the emergency department at Central Maine Medical Center every morning at 6:30, checking on them, checking on we call it the house.
Yeah.
Seeing how the night went. check in with the patient care administrator that, you know, ran the place overnight. And then I'm usually standing at one of our entrances just to greet team members and patients coming in early in the morning. That's no matter what the day brings or what lies ahead, I show up. You know, I'm there. We take turns taking administrative call. There's five or six of us that take call 24/7. And on weekends, the administrator on call is asked to come in and round up and engage with team members, just see what's going on and be seen. And when it's my turn, I usually round at the medical center. If I don't go up to Bridgeton Hospital or Rumford Hospital, I go to the medical center and round on the night shift.
Nice.
Which I don't get a chance to do during the week, obviously. So, you know, that's my belief. It's, you know, I don't work remotely, and not because I don't believe in it, but because it's kind of hard to work in a hospital and work remotely. And so even if things aren't going well, even if people are unhappy with me or a decision that I've made, or they don't understand something, you know, I'm still going to show up and do the best I can to, you know, answer questions and, you know, even face criticism. You know, it doesn't really matter. You still got to be there, and that's my job. And so even when the temperature gets a little hot, I just believe that, you know, first thing I've got to do is show up.
What I love about that, though it seems super obvious, much like you, I don't think I think about that. I don't think I think about it as an option. I don't think I think, I certainly don't think about not showing up. Right? Like
a lot of people do, though.
As you said, I'm like, right, no, there's a whole segment of folks who opt out of that thing or do think it's an option or that's the thing they have to focus on. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to work remote today because, you know, so-and-so may not be so happy with me, so maybe I'll avoid them. You know, you got to show up and over time, people then depend on you. Mm-hmm. And if they can depend on you, they can trust you. And so to me, it starts with just making sure that I show up every day.
Yeah, just show up, folks. Just show up. It really is the first step, though. You can't do anything else if you're...
It is, yeah. You're right.
Ready to dig a little deeper?
Sure.
Okay. You've held executive roles across multiple systems in several states, from Jefferson Health in Philly?
Yeah, it was a short stint. It sounds like I'm a bit of a job hopper here, but that really isn't the case.
Well, this is an audio podcast, but okay. You're not 29.
Yeah, that's true.
You've had some time to have a career.
Yeah, no, I was in Philly just for a year, but before that was with the same health system in New Jersey, and was the president of the same health hospital in that health system for 18 years, and then was with the health system for 20. But after 20 years in New Jersey, I was ready for a change. It just, Philly wasn't the right change for me.
Yeah, so, listen.
You know, it was an experiment.
No offense to Philly folks, but...
Yeah, Jefferson Health is a great health system. My longtime mentor, who's actually on the board of Central Maine Healthcare now, was the chief operating officer of that system, and he brought me to Philadelphia, but things didn't work out. But fortunately, I ended up coming to Maine as a result.
So what brought you to Maine?
It was the job.
What's different about leading here?
Yeah.
What's different about being here?
I was definitely looking to leave New Jersey. I was actually in New Jersey for 27 years. It's a small state. And I had really great experience. Both my daughters were born in New Jersey. They're Jersey girls. They don't pump their own gas.
Is that even an option in Jersey?
It's the state law. Yep. Yeah, you can't pump your own gas in New Jersey.
Yeah.
Yeah. So my girls are helpless.
It's very confusing for a Mainer driving through. I got to be honest with you. Mark, have you had that experience?
I have. I pulled up to the pump and got out of my car and was told to get back in.
You get a dirty look.
Yes, sure. You do.
It's wild.
Yeah. So one of my bosses in the 20 years that I was with the Meridian Health System in Central New Jersey was, when I was leaving Philadelphia, at the time was the CEO of Central Maine Healthcare, Jeff Brickman.
Oh yeah.
And I had worked for him for 5 years in New Jersey. He was my boss, and then he went on to do other things in Illinois and Colorado, and ultimately landed here in Maine. And when I left Jefferson Health, I was reintroduced to Jeff, and the timing was perfect. And that was March or April of 2020. I ended up interviewing for the job here and ultimately getting it. I was actually hired as the president of Central Maine Medical Center.
Yeah.
With the thought that potentially I could succeed Jeff when he retired, although there was no promise of that and no timeline. But as it turned out, Jeff ended up retiring in July of 2021, just a little over a year later.
Yeah.
And I was named CEO.
I started a new job right before the pandemic. So I lived through all of the surprises and uncertainty of the pandemic, having made a commitment and then leaning into how that was changing based on this, you know, emergent reality. You existed in that emergent reality and said, now's a good time to run a hospital.
Yeah. I'm not sure anybody really realized what we were in for as early as April of 2020. I remember flying up for my second interview from Philadelphia, and that's when nobody was flying. I was actually the only person on the airplane.
Can you imagine?
When I flew up here.
Did they let you sit wherever you wanted?
No, I had an assigned seat, of course. So
did you have enough leg room? Did you fight for a little
I was the only person on the airplane. It's when they were flying airplanes just to fly them so that the pilots could get their hours, even though nobody was flying.
Crazy.
And then when I flew back after my interview, we landed at Philadelphia at the airport. I got off the plane and I walked to my car at the parking garage. I never saw a person. And then I remember I started May 1st here and I rented an apartment in Portland. And I walked from my apartment. It was a Sunday, first weekend in May, and I walked from my apartment down Commercial Street to Becky's Diner and back, and I don't think I saw one person.
Yeah.
No cars, for sure.
Crazy.
Everything was shut up.
Yeah.
You know, shut down tight. So, you know, did we know what we were in for in terms of, you know, just how rabid that virus is going to be and how many lives it would take and what that would mean to healthcare? It certainly didn't dawn on me.
Yeah, right.
You know? And then, you know, it wasn't until the winter of 2022, actually, remember the Omicron and Delta viruses,
yeah,
if you remember those that hit.
They were almost worse in some ways.
They were worse.
Yeah.
And in October of 2021, when the vaccine mandate for healthcare workers kicked in, we lost 200 people.
That's right.
200 people quit their jobs at Central Maine Healthcare. And then that virus, you know, morphed into, I forget which came first. And so we were so short-staffed that winter, January, February, and March of 2022, and there were so many people getting sick, our own team members, people in the community, we ended up having to bring in the active duty military to run our emergency department, or we would have had to shut down. Mm-hmm. And that was like rock bottom. And that was almost two years after I started, you know, after the pandemic hit.
Yeah.
So little did we know that it was going to be such a long,
persistent,
even getting worse over time before it got better. And then, of course, we started the vaccine clinic at the Auburn Mall.
Yeah.
And we vaccinated, I forget the number, I think 55, 60,000 people.
So many people.
Yeah.
And my family and I got vaccinated there.
Yeah.
Our first and probably our second round, actually.
Yeah. Before we opened the mall, we actually gave the vaccines in the lobby of the hospital when we first got the vaccine.
Yeah.
And we all volunteered to, you know, give out shots, and we had to register people, and yeah. We really came out of it if you look back, we really did. I mean, the science and just
you know,
how everything came together, we as a planet.
Yeah.
We really did come out of it relatively quickly. But I mean, I forget how many people died, you know, as a result of the pandemic, mm-hmm. but it was a tough time for sure. And a tough time to be in healthcare.
Yeah.
But in many ways, like everything, it was one of our most rewarding experiences.
Yeah.
I mean, what we were able to do for the community, serving the community. You know, we were taking care of each other and taking care of our patients.
There has been some really significant positive changes that came through, too.
Yeah, no question. I think we're a stronger organization and a stronger community.
Yeah.
Again, you know, not to belabor the point, but back to the shooting, same thing.
Yeah.
You know, we're a stronger organization and a stronger health system and a stronger community as a result.
It showed.
Yeah.
It showed and was noted over and over again. We did some ongoing work with some of the survivors of October 25th and their families, and just the stories of care that we heard them get while they were in the hospital.
Yeah.
Like really great, full care. Not just clinical care, but like care.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was really notable.
Yeah. Thank you. I've heard many people say, both inside and outside of our health system, that it was, you know, our strongest moment, you know, all things considered.
I think it establishes a new, it's not just expectation, but a new knowledge of what you're capable of.
And
as a team, as a community,
yes.
Like all of that is just like anything, we would figure it out and we would do it darn well.
Yeah.
Really darn well.
Yeah. And, you know, who to thunk, right? We knew we had good doctors, we knew we had good nurses, but yeah. You know, I don't think anybody knew that we had that capability lying within.
Yeah.
Until it was time, and you know, just proved that, you know, people rise to the occasion.
That's almost always been my experience.
Mine too.
Yep. I love that about people. There's always like bad headlines and bad stories and there's bad people. But man, when I look at my life on any given kind of retroactive glance, there is always so much more good.
Yeah. It's like our industry today. I mean, all the news is bad about the state of the hospital industry, right? In Maine and across the country, but it casts a cloud over all the great work that's done, you know, again, people caring for people every single day, the advances in medicine and just the great work that, you know, people in healthcare do every day, the challenges in funding our industry, our system, you know, our hospitals, those stories are front and center. Occasionally you get a good story about, you know, somebody getting really great care or, you know, advances in medicine, but
of the little hats that get knit for the NICU babies.
Sure,
like there's the cute stories.
Yeah.
There's a million that are untold.
So, you know, it's our job to bring the positives forward and focus on them, even in the face of, you know, significant challenges today.
Yeah. So let's talk about those a little bit.
There are lots of them.
Yeah. Well, so a few episodes back, we also talked to Ken Albert about some, we won't assume the listeners have heard all of the things, nor guys, is this a quiz for anybody, I promise. But what we see locally, and this is the thing that I try to call attention to, because I spent years living in downtown, right? Like
I know.
Bartlett Street, the number of people I could see who were definitely your employees walking to work every day. Right? Like they've got the CNA scrubs on, they've got their name badge on, they've got their environmental services clothes on. Like it's a working class neighborhood and you're the biggest employer by far within walking distance. Mm-hmm. And so oftentimes when we were hearing things about healthcare, you're hearing about it through the lens of like your neighbor, you're hearing about it in the grocery store line about how long lines are, or whether you could or couldn't get Meme in for her hip appointment, right? Like you hear about it in that way. You hear about costs and you hear about access, and it can start to feel really localized. Like the problems that we're having are somehow like this hospital, this city, this state. And the reality is we're part of a much larger system. We talk about, I mean, even you are, you know, a leader of a healthcare system. But even our healthcare system's embedded inside these other bigger systems that have all these pressures. So what is the kind of state of the state currently at the hospital, in your healthcare system, in Maine, and beyond? Because I know it's super interconnected.
Well, first of all, I think at the state level, which is kind of the level at which we can all start to understand what's going on, the hospital industry, because healthcare is made up of a lot of different moving parts, but the hospital industry is very sick and getting sicker. It's been sick for a long time, actually, but it hasn't been the front page news that it is today, and we can talk about the reasons for that. But the Maine Hospital Association commissioned a study earlier this year that compared the financial state of the hospitals in Maine to the hospitals in New England and across the country. And what they found out is that Maine hospitals are the fifth poorest hospitals in the country and the second most indebted. So when it comes to generating income, we're the fifth poorest in the country, and yet we have more debt than 48 other, on average, hospitals in 48 other states. And that's a bad combination, right? To have a lot, I mean, think about your own personal situation, right? You got a big mortgage and not a lot of income to cover it. Mm-hmm. And so things add up quickly, and over time they get worse. They get like exponentially worse because then things start to break down in your house and you don't have the money to fix
them
because now you're trying to make your mortgage payment, right? That's what's happened. And so
you just described my 20s,
right? All of us, right?
Right.
Or 30s. Yes.
Yeah.
So that's what's happened. I think there are a number of reasons for why Maine is so much worse off when it comes to hospitals generating income and relying on debt to help build and maintain the infrastructure. And one of them is that Maine is the oldest state in the nation.
Yeah.
You know, when you look at the average age of a Mainer, it's higher than the average age of anybody in any other of any other state in the country. And it's a relatively poor state as well.
Yeah.
And so when it comes to healthcare, an aging population increases demand. And when it comes to average income, people can't afford the care.
Yeah.
And that
well,
really...
and then your infrastructure is spread out over some serious geography too.
Right. Right.
Not easy.
Yeah, which impacts access to care.
Yeah.
And it makes it more expensive to reach people. So there are a lot of factors that are unique about Maine that impact, mostly in a negative way, the hospital industry in Maine. And it's starting to catch up with us. And so what's happening is we're starting to see closures of hospitals, if you can believe it. I mean, with the closure of Inland Hospital in Waterville.
Just.
I mean, what a shocker.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, and there was not a lot of lead up.
No.
There was not.
No, but that's just it, right? Until very recently, nobody was talking about
yeah.
the state of finances in the hospital industry or the healthcare industry in the state of Maine. And then all of a sudden, we saw all of these hospitals closing maternity units
yep.
and obstetrical programs. Most of them, however, were not because of money. They were because of declining birth rates and the challenges in maintaining quality when you're only doing 50 deliveries a year. They were mostly, in fact, we closed our maternity units at Bridgeton and Rumford hospitals primarily because we couldn't ensure quality because the numbers just weren't there. The doctor that was delivering babies in Rumford lived in South Carolina and would fly back and forth. Well, you know, that's not
wild.
Sustainable.
Yeah.
Right. So it really wasn't about money. But there's no question that the closure of Inland Hospital was all about money. That study that I referred to that the Hospital Association did showed that there are a number of hospitals, some small, some not small, that are at high risk of closure. And, you know, we've got to do something to stem the tide, for sure.
So, I mean, I was going to say thanks for not closing, right? Like,
yeah.
it genuinely. So, I mean, yeah. I grew up in rural Maine, and a lot of the care access points that my family goes to or that I grew up going to, harder to get into, less providers, or have closed altogether.
Yeah.
And I know that it would be so easy for us to only see more of that. I hope, and we will make time, I promise, to talk about like solutions and what
yeah.
we can do as individuals,
yeah.
what
right.
we can do as a society, because I think there's, you know, both. But genuinely, thanks for not closing.
Yeah.
Truly, truly, because I think it is not just healthcare and what it means for future generations. And I get so nervous when I see birthing centers and maternity care close, because if being the oldest state in the nation is a contributor to our problems, we are ensuring ourselves that fate when we make it harder for young families to come here or young people to come here and have families.
Right.
And our population's going to stay dense and localized in what I'm using air quotes, central Maine. We aren't in central Maine by geography, anywhere near it. And by population, we're coming up on the, you know, northern third of the population in Maine, just sitting here in Lewiston and Auburn. And so, you know, those pieces are real kind of like self-drivers towards perpetuating the same realities.
That's right. And if you think about, you know, some of these hospitals, I mean, we have two of them that they're just 25-bed hospitals. I mean, they're federally designated as small rural hospitals. But in many of the communities where these 25 hospitals are in the state of Maine, they're not only the access point to healthcare,
yeah.
they're also the largest employer. Imagine a 25-bed hospital is the largest employer
yep.
in that town
yeah.
or in that county.
Yeah. I grew up with my dad working at a small
yeah.
rural hospital.
Yeah. So,
and it's 100% the case.
Right.
It's the lifeblood of the community.
Right. So as these hospitals continue to struggle, it's something that we all have to be concerned about, for sure.
What is it that people can be thinking about, average Mainers? Because you do a great job, Ken did too, about making these really hard, really complex conversations about complex systems with multiple, because you talk about the hospital industry, but there's the pharmaceutical industry, there's
sure.
all of these industries that kind of come into this system.
Nursing homes, home
yeah.
care.
Yeah.
Right.
Ambulances, transportation, that none of it's the education. Like, you have your own college for for public health professionals and for nurses, and the system is huge and it's complex, and it can be really hard. Two things. It can be really hard to understand it. It can be even harder to care enough to try to understand it when you're just trying to figure out why Mehmet can't get the appointment that she needs, or you're not sure when you're gonna, like, it can be really hard to make that hit home for an average Mainer. So what should the average Mainer business owner, parent, or student, what should they care about? Why should they care about the financial health of their local hospital system?
Well, you know, healthcare, like schools and you know, local government, police and fire, right? They're all fundamental to the overall health of a community, you know, whether you've got a hospital in your town or not, right? So the average person needs to understand how fundamental hospitals and health systems are. As you said, I think they're lifeblood of the community.
Yeah.
And be asking questions about how is my local hospital doing? Are they planning any reductions in services? Are they growing? You know, I tell our team members all the time, growth of our business, growth just like in the human body, is a sign of health, right?
Yeah.
You want to be growing because growth of our business means we're growing our top line revenue, and that enables us to keep up with growth of expenses because we all know expenses are increasing.
I have seen that.
Right?
Yes.
So when you go to the doctor, right, how's your practice doing? If your practice is part of a hospital system, how's the hospital system doing?
So we can just
they're
ask?
Not, absolutely.
Why?
Absolutely. Because, you know, back to your point about nobody really knew about the challenges that Inland Hospital was facing until the announcement that it was closing.
Yeah.
Could we all have done something different had we known? I don't know. You know, if the local high school closes,
can you imagine?
Overnight.
Could you imagine?
Right? People are going to say, how come I wasn't asking the question?
Yeah.
And I don't think it's any different for a local resource like a hospital or a physician practice.
I don't know why this is the case. And maybe it's not. Maybe it's just me and many folks that I talk to. We feel comfortable showing up at a school board meeting and questioning what's going on.
There you go.
We feel comfortable. I serve on a local planning board, and I can tell you people feel comfortable using their 3 minutes at the mic to ask questions about all kinds of different things, permitting fees and why the ordinance says that. There is something unpenetrable, untouchable about healthcare and hospitals. Like, you folks are all educated. You have the power and the ability to make me healthy or not. Like, there's this interesting power dynamic. I feel like people are terrified to question anything related in health. And then there's the really big bills that we get, which are not paying the bills for you and could literally bankrupt most people. And so the disconnect for them and understanding how that's the case. And I know that you manage your financials of the hospital and healthcare system smartly.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to talk about some of that in a minute.
Right.
But, like, I know that the math truly isn't there for you, but that can be so hard to comprehend for some folks who can be really overwhelmed.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. It is interesting because the difference with most hospitals, not all across the country, is that they're actually private businesses.
Yeah.
I mean, Central Maine Healthcare is a private, not-for-profit corporation. So you don't have the public access to a board meeting that you would a school board or a city council. And so there's a fundamental difference that creates a bit of a veil and a barricade, you know, to public disclosure and input. Nonetheless, at Central Maine Healthcare, and we talk about this all the time, and we try to show it too, you know, we want to have a powerful impact in the communities that we serve. And so we're out there. I'm speaking at the breakfast in June.
Yeah.
I think it's our responsibility.
And not the first one.
And I think it's our responsibility to be out there and to engage and to be honest and transparent and give people that opportunity to ask questions. How are you doing? What are you doing? What does it mean to us? What does it mean to the community? I know that with our announcement that we were being acquired, that was a shock as well. I don't know that it was as big of a shock that we were looking for a partner, because we've been looking for a partner and we've been very transparent about that, or at least we thought we were, for quite some time. But the fact that we actually found someone, that was a bit of a surprise.
But an exciting one.
Yeah, I think so. And to your point, there are opportunities to engage with people that are working in hospitals, leaders of hospitals and health systems, physician practices. And because healthcare is such a personal and important thing for people, they shouldn't be afraid to speak about how the hospitals are doing, how the doctors are doing, what that means to them. Is their practice secure? Are they growing? Are they going to add another doctor? You know, why are they not answering the phone? Why are you short-staffed? What's going on, right? How does that affect me?
Where would someone start with even
just
one
talk
of
to your
those
doctor.
Questions?
Just talk to your doctor.
I love that.
Yeah, talk to your doctor, talk to your nurse practitioner, talk to your provider. If you go to the emergency department, why is it taking me so long?
Yeah.
The number one complaint in the ER, you know, it's always the wait time, right? Why is it waiting? Why do I have to wait so long? Don't hesitate to ask questions. And then we send a survey. We send a survey to every patient that comes through our doors.
You really do.
We really do.
Yeah.
And so there's an opportunity right there to engage and ask for a call back.
That is honestly the most tangible bit of advice because you can't see a healthcare provider without getting a how do we do, we want to know. And I don't know that a lot of people take the time not only to tell you how their experience was, but to ask for. And I'd love a chance to talk to somebody, or I have some questions. That's a really easy engagement point.
Right.
You guys make it very easy for us.
Yeah, thank you.
We probably make it challenging.
Yeah.
Us, because I'm guilty of having deleted that message probably more than once. Well, so there's two things I want to talk about. You tell me where you'd like to go next, because I want to talk about Prime Health, because I'm super excited about what they're bringing, about the partnership that you really took a lot of time and thought to figure out what you guys wanted to do. And so I want to talk about that. But I also want to talk about, I guess, the future of healthcare systems in Maine and this, because there's this, like, future for CMH and what Prime Health's investments and commitments, what that is going to do for patients and providers and communities that are served by CM and Prime Health, you know, the name is not going to change. So Central Maine.
Right.
And that feels like, particularly in light of the Inland closing, that feels like this really bright, shiny, almost guilt-ridden moment for our region in a state of which does not have a lot of those solutions at hand. And we know that the direction of healthcare in Maine is not forward momentum with commitment and investment on the horizon. And so, like, that's a really interesting path to mash up.
It is.
Where would you like to go next?
So, just to talk about Prime Healthcare Foundation and the journey that we've been on, you know, it goes back decades. It really does. Leaders of hospitals have known for a long time that size really matters to a hospital's ability to generate enough resources to keep up with rising costs, rising labor costs, rising technology costs, primarily. Because the bigger you are, the more you can spread risk and the less dependent on, you know, one negative aspect of the business. When I was in New Jersey, I was part of a 7 hospital health system that generated $1.3 billion a year in revenue, and we didn't think we were big enough. I mean, we were the size of, a little bit smaller than Maine Health. And we didn't think we were big enough, so we merged with Hackensack, which was a little bit bigger than us, to create Hackensack Meridian Health, which is now 16 hospitals and $7 billion of revenue. So it's a big system. And we're seeing this happen all across the country. Health systems that, like Maine Health, that have dozens of hospitals in one state, are merging with other health systems in other states and becoming multi-state systems, because they're not big enough. And so what we have in Maine is small systems and a bunch of little hospitals that are not big enough.
Yeah.
And the state is not, in my opinion, hospitals in the state of Maine are not moving fast enough. That's why there's trouble on the horizon.
Yeah.
And I worry about that. I don't think we've seen the last of the inland hospitals unless something fundamentally changes. Fortunately, my predecessor and his predecessor both saw the need for Central Maine Healthcare to be part of something bigger and stronger. And so they actually started looking for a partner long before I showed up.
Yeah.
And just couldn't, for a variety of reasons, couldn't find the right partner. And so I kind of picked up, or we, I should say, the board of directors of Central Maine Healthcare and our senior leadership team, we picked up where they left off. Only we looked outside the box. We looked at companies that weren't in New England. Nobody had done that before.
Huh.
They had looked at health systems that were based in like Nashville, like Hospital Corporation of America, which is a for-profit health system, but they have hospitals in New Hampshire. Nobody had really looked to California or far enough away from New England that would represent kind of starting from scratch. And through basically a friend of a friend, it didn't really work that way, but through a contact, we were introduced to Prime Healthcare. And I know them because they have three hospitals in New Jersey. And when I was there, I knew those hospitals and I knew Prime Healthcare's reputation. And I saw what they had done in New Jersey with those hospitals, all good. So it wasn't a completely foreign organization to us. We met with them and one thing led to another. And after a year, literally, of due diligence and negotiating a contract, we were able to come to a deal late last year and we announced it in January. And it's really innovative. It's very innovative. They don't have any hospitals in Maine. The closest they have to us is Landmark Medical Center in Woonsocket, Rhode Island, where they have one hospital, and then they've got they've got three in New Jersey and several in Philadelphia, and we're going to become part of that region. But they're a very successful organization. Our board of directors set criteria for any partner. One of the criteria was we had to remain not-for-profit, which we can, because Prime Healthcare Foundation is actually a public charity. Mm-hmm. And they had to commit to a significant investment, which they have. And so we're very excited about what this means, because as a result, our future is secure. And I'm sure you can imagine what that means to the 3,200 people that work at Central Maine.
I mean, I know firsthand, right? Yeah. Because I know many of those people and regardless of whether employees knew, you know, which partnership was being explored or that a partnership was being explored or that even really great criteria had been set, they knew that times were tough, that they'd been up and down tough. And I think always a sense of like, I'm not sure what's going to happen.
Right.
Right. Like I'm hopeful. I have good reason to believe. Those are things that I would hear, but it was always laced with like uncertainty. And so, you know, when you guys made the announcement, and I think for anyone who attended the info session that you all hosted at the right. Franco Center with some of the leadership from Prime 2, it's the amount. So it's $150 million over
5 years.
5 years.
Yeah. It's and a real shot in the arm.
And
for sure.
It's a beautiful thing. And
it's a beautiful thing.
They made that commitment in other communities and have surpassed it. They've never not met it. They've only surpassed it. They're just smart when they make a conservative commitment.
Absolutely. Because they know that when they invest, they improve the business, they improve the care, and it grows the business, and they get a return.
Yeah.
Right? So they're smart people. They've proven this time and time again. And to your point, every hospital that we visited, and we visited four of them and talked to their frontline staff, their leadership, their doctors, in every instance, they had invested more money sooner than they said they would.
Yeah. That's a track record. That's the kind of track record you want to...
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So one of the things that stuck out to me from that info session, which was like a footnote for you. You're like, oh, and by the way, but I just thought was super, super powerful. As you've started working through kind of like the transition phase and there's like licensing and perp, there's all a bunch of stuff, right? But as you've been going through that, you've already been kind of contracting and doing some like systems change and
That's data
and evaluation work. And you have already also seen some results.
That's right.
You've got to say something about that.
Yeah. Well, because they have the resources, right?
It was incredible.
We've, over the years, because we didn't have the money, we've had to outsource a number of our key services and pay a hefty price for that.
Yeah.
Right? It's like in your own home. You know, you go to a place to get something and you pay a premium because you need it, even though it would be cheaper, you know, to lease or to rent something, even
plan
though
that
it would
renovation
be cheaper
for
to,
next year, not
to buy it
the
on
roof
your own.
The, oh,
you know,
yeah.
So we've paid, you know, high interest rates to get equipment, for example, that we couldn't afford to buy on our own. Well, now with their advice and hopefully the approval of this deal before the end of the calendar year and the reassurance that this money is going to be coming our way, we've started to insource services like our laboratory. For example, we're buying all the equipment back from Quest, and we're going to run that laboratory ourselves and not pay high prices to an outside laboratory. And that's going to drop millions of dollars to our bottom line. If it wasn't for Prime Healthcare showing us the way to do that and ensuring us that we would have the money to buy the equipment, we would have had to renew that expensive lease with Quest and continue to pay a premium for every lab test done at Central Maine. So that's just one example, and there are many. We're insourcing a lot of things that were outsourced. They really don't believe in outsourcing. And so that's one of the reasons that the jobs are so secure for the people that work for Central Maine Healthcare now, even though we're going to convert over after closing and become part of Prime Healthcare Foundation. All of our team members will have jobs because they know that, you know, we're not going to be outsourcing anything.
That's incredible.
Yes.
Business is business, and industry to industry, there's always nuance, but I'm going to seek an economy of scale. I'm going to merge with or be acquired by someone who is the same size as us or larger. And then the next steps, as the story goes and as history has proven out a bunch of times, is everything that we can outsource, we will. Every job that we can cut, we will. Every expense. And literally your playbook is the reverse.
It is.
Line by line. And and the thing that's most amazing is there's 14 other hospitals under their nonprofit side. Mm-hmm. They're 51
total. Yeah.
Total. And so they've never once closed a hospital. They've never once had, and it's not that some of the hospitals don't financially underperform. Sometimes that's just the breaks of demographics and health in a region.
Right.
And they still pull from their larger 51 hospital system to make sure that those hospitals don't close.
They do.
That's the kind of track record that gets me like super excited about the choice you've made.
Right.
Thanks again to you and the trustees. It's not a small lift for a board to work through a process like this.
It is not. It takes, and we're very fortunate, I'm very fortunate that we have, the role of the Central Maine Healthcare Board will change significantly. We'll still have a board, but it will be more of an advisory board. And so our board members know that. And so this has never been about them. This has been all about sustaining and securing our future, the future of Central Maine Healthcare and the health system. So it takes a special group of people to put themselves in the back seat and the health system and the future of the health system and the people that work for Central Maine Healthcare and the people we care for in the front seat.
And they did.
They absolutely did.
And they drove it home.
Yes.
Just because I love a good metaphor if we're going to take
That's
it all
right.
the way.
Yes.
What's your favorite thing about your arrangement with Prime Health that's going to be like, because there's a whole there's a litany of really great things that the next five years
Well, the money is pretty good.
Yeah, $150 million would probably be the top of my like personal list.
Yeah, you know, that's a really good question. I think it is, they're really, the company was founded by a physician.
Yeah.
And it's physician-led. And physician-led is actually one of their values. And when you talk to the physician leaders of Prime Healthcare and Prime Healthcare Foundation, they're really two separate companies. And so the physician leaders of each of the companies are different. But when you talk to any one of them, what they talk about is delivering quality healthcare in communities that would otherwise struggle or through hospitals that would otherwise, you know, close or continue to underserve. They're really mission driven.
Yeah.
And so when you look at the, you know, Passaic, New Jersey, Woonsocket, Rhode Island, Lewiston, Maine, these are typical inner city Los Angeles. These are typical communities where Prime has stepped in and not only saved hospitals, but saved lives.
Yeah.
And that's their mantra. It's saving hospitals, saving lives. And they really believe in that.
Yeah.
You know, it's like we were saying earlier, that the money follows.
Yeah.
But that's not what motivates them.
So that's what struck me so much at the info session. Yeah. So you had, was it Dr. Mata?
Yeah, Dr. Mata is the CEO of Region 2, which is Philadelphia, New Jersey, Rhode Island, and soon to be Maine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then there was another two gentlemen there?
Fred Ortega is their VP of Government Relations who spoke.
Yeah. Really tall guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. What blew my mind that was just like consistent, it was natural, not just during the kind of like planned remarks where you guys were sharing some of the information about what to expect and more about Prime Healthcare Foundation and more about the deal, but in all of the questions that came from the crowd and their responses to it, you could just see the authenticity. It wasn't like rehearsed talking points.
Right.
I go at a lot of public sessions.
Yeah.
A lot of talking points out there. And like the physician-led piece was core to
it
every,
absolutely is.
I mean, it just showed up in every single remark, in every single response. And I think somebody asked something like, you know, what are some of the changes hospitals see, or, you know, what's the benefit? And they didn't, I don't even know if they answered in dollars. I mean, they were able to talk to sustainability for sure, but they talked about health outcomes. They talked about improved ratings for hospitals, the decreased bed stays, lower readmittance, like actual genuine.
Absolutely.
And they were super proud of it.
As they should be.
100%. Yeah.
And then they have the awards to show for it.
Yeah.
You know, again, the awards come later and are a byproduct of their work, but what's the social ability award that they won? Where they were recognized for social responsibility.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, far from, you know, being a money-making, you know, operation, it's about the social responsibility. It's about taking care of, like I said earlier, it's saving hospitals, saving lives. So, to your point, they're mission-driven and their motives are pure.
And it totally showed.
Right.
I am really excited for the day when we can be proud in this community about the healthcare that's being delivered, and not just the fact that it's open or that we have this, you know, one branch or one piece of medicine that's like, but just
generally.
Yeah. And it's, and that's no discredit to the people who work there, or it's not that we don't have a good hospital. It's just that there is so many mounting pressures against a hospital that make it really hard to be successful across the board.
Yeah, I mean, you can pick up any blog, right, and or social media page and read about, you know, somebody's complaint about trying to get through to a doctor's office or get an appointment. And I think that not too long after we close on this deal and the impact of the investments that Prime Healthcare Foundation is going to make, we're going to start to see a lot of positive comments about the actual delivery of healthcare. You know, go to Central Maine, go to Bridgeton Hospital, call Dr. Pierco, call Dr. Stadnicki, because you can get through their office and you're going to get an appointment quickly, because that practice is growing. They're adding doctors. That's the narrative, you know, that we're going to hopefully hear in our communities as a result of this investment.
I'm really excited for that and grateful for your leadership.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, genuinely, because I know growth is hard.
Well, change is harder.
Yep. Well, and good luck having growth that doesn't have change with it.
Right.
Right? Like, but change that's, you could have change that's not growth. You could have change that's reduction or, you know, decline, and change is always hard.
Yeah.
Growth is really hard because it's not just that you're tackling the change and you're choosing to do it. It's not like accidental growth. You're not walking into it and being like, oh, look, we grew by accident. But it is, I think, choosing to grow, it requires a type of leadership that has vision and hope and belief attached to it. And I don't say that lightly, Steve, because, I've known you almost since, I don't know, 6 months after you arrived and started working here. And you have carried that at times where you had no good reason to.
Yeah, well, I'm not sure about that. we talked earlier about, you know, our experience, you know, in 2020, 2021, 22, and we were focused on, you know, very different things out of necessity. But once we came out of the pandemic and really started to think about our future, you know, we knew that we had to do something. We just kept our nose to the grindstone. And, you know, I said that we went through a year of due diligence and contract negotiations with Prime Healthcare. We went through a year or two of searching for the right partner before that.
Yeah.
So it was a journey, no question. We always knew it was the right thing. And, you know, frankly, we held out hope that we would find the right partner eventually.
Yeah.
And we did.
You really did. You really, I was optimistic before the info session. I left that info session absolutely excited about the future.
Yeah.
Like just hands down.
We are excited. Yeah.
For all the rest of the hospitals in Maine that don't have that partnership. What are some, I mean, I, for what it's worth, I grew up in the coast. So my high school town was Blue Hill. My dad worked in Ellsworth. Wow. I grew up in Orland. My parents worked at Bangor Mental Health Institution. The hospital, like truly healthcare and the hospital systems have been part of my life. And I'm seeing, you know, in posts from my friends who still live in the areas, changes across the board. And it feels like it's accelerating, right? So
it has to.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We've never had the conversation. It was never part of our deal, but, you know, could Prime Healthcare or Prime Healthcare Foundation, the not-for-profit, expand their footprint in Maine? Who knows? I mean, it's one potential opportunity. They've got a lot of capital built up. They're growing their health system. They're making investments. Hopefully, they would be attracted to other hospitals in Maine or New England. But whether it's Prime Healthcare or some other alternative source of funding, that's what we need.
Yeah.
Right? We need alternative sources of funding because Medicare and Medicaid and the patient can't continue to keep up with the rising cost of healthcare. And so
that's
we
what I was
need
gonna
to
say.
Be innovative in funding mechanisms. Now, the dreaded words venture capital always crop up.
Yeah.
You know, venture capital funding in healthcare has not always been good and has not always improved healthcare. Because when it comes to venture capital, one thing matters and one thing only, and that's profit and that's money. And healthcare and caring for people takes a backseat oftentimes. But we can't let that perception cloud our ability to think creatively about alternative funding mechanisms for healthcare. And looking beyond the four walls of our industry and the four walls of our state for options. And I think leaders in our industry and leaders in our state need to understand that and not be looking to maintain the status quo and not be afraid of something different and not be afraid of experimenting and allowing for innovation. There's a bill that was drafted, you know, just in this session of the legislature, clamping down on outside investment of resources in hospitals and healthcare. Fortunately, it doesn't have anything to do with us or Prime Healthcare, but, you know, paranoia is not going to help us.
No.
And it's not going to solve the problem. Innovation and creativity are. And so that's what I would encourage my colleagues and our elected officials to be thinking about, not preserving the status quo.
Okay. So often when I have conversations with folks about healthcare policy and healthcare systems, a lot of it does track back to Medicaid and Medicare and reimbursement rates and keeping up with inflation. And that's not a problem. Like, that is part of the problem. But part of what you're offering is our solutions need to go beyond just looking to that as the solution.
No question.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, relying on Medicare and Medicaid is a dead end. It absolutely is. And you know, now we're hearing about the next federal fiscal year budget proposals and the cuts to Medicare and Medicaid.
So significant.
You know, they're very significant. And whether you agree with them or not, it does point to the fact that, you know, we can't sustain the rate of spending in healthcare, public spending, that we've been experiencing. And so alternative funding mechanisms and coming up with different approaches to allowing innovation and investment and expansion of services, not retrenchment and not protecting the status quo. I mean, you look at, we have to get a certificate of need, right? We have to get regulatory approval to do this deal. And we're fine with that. And we knew that was the deal when we started it. But that's regulation really to preserve the status quo, if you think about it.
Yeah.
Right? And what we need is really the opposite. We need regulations. We need to loosen the reins, not tighten the reins, and invite entrepreneur, you know, investments in healthcare and different ways of delivering healthcare. You think about healthcare, it's generally, I mean, I think of hospitals as big box stores. rarely does anybody go to a bookstore to buy a book anymore.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But that's what hospitals are. They're big box stores. It's because in order to do anything really creative or alternative, you need permission and you need a certificate of need.
Yeah.
And it stunts our growth. It stunts our innovation. And I think we need to be thinking outside the box.
Not only do I think that's right, and I see that that philosophy is something we as Maine hold, right? Like the notion that you don't have to create an annual letter or every 5 years a letter of why you haven't changed anything. Write your annual report on that and force us to explain why we haven't updated our practices or haven't changed or diversified our revenue sources or right. Like I see it in workforce. I see it in education. I mean, it impacts so many, and it, not just Maine, New England, right? Like we're some of the oldest parts in the U.S. and we take our history seriously and, you know, history becomes legacy and there's all of these kind of emotional pieces wrapped up in it. And I just, in the places where I see growth, it is because people are not held captive by this is how we've always done it.
Yeah.
That's, I'm looking at Mark because that is like my most hated rationale for anything. In fact, for me, anytime that comes up, it's an invitation to like, look here, flip that stone, lift the rug and start there on things that obviously need change if we're holding it hostage with, well, because we've always done it this way.
And it's all we know.
Yeah.
Right. But we don't know it all. People are doing different things and they're doing them successfully. They're lowering the cost of healthcare. They're improving access to healthcare all across the country. And we need to look to those other experiments, those other alternative delivery models, and we need to bring them to Maine. And hopefully the legislature and community business leaders and healthcare, my colleagues in the industry, will begin to see that there are opportunities out there.
Yeah.
We just have to think about things a little bit differently and certainly not think about them as the way we've always done them.
Yeah. Unproven and dangerous.
Right.
That feels like the summary of, that feels really risky. We talk about risk a lot on this podcast because I think that's part of what I was trying to put voice to, right? About you have been willing to take risks when everything around you is already risky. And most traditional leaders would be like, if that risk is optional, I'd just rather not.
Yeah. Or, because it's a lot easier to ride it out.
Yeah.
You know? And because of the deterioration of our hospital finances in the state of Maine, nobody can continue to ride it out. Because it will just get worse.
You spend all of your time, not all of your time, you have a life, you have children, you occasionally get back to Jersey, visit family, but you spend a good amount of your time from one organizational leader to another. You spend a good amount of your time having these conversations, working on this work, tending to your team members, thinking about your patients, thinking about your communities. When you are thinking in systems, what keeps you front and center with the people and lives that you're impacting? Like, you've served on so many boards. I see you do things in other spaces. What are the things that you do and prioritize to stay connected to who you are and the values that drive you and the true why behind your work? Because it would be really easy to get stuck in the day-to-day and the systems thinking, and you don't.
No. Well, maybe I do, though, admittedly, because you can sort of get lost in the fog, you know. I just try to find opportunities to engage with patients. I talked at 7:30 this morning. I talked to a young lady who I bumped into in the cafeteria who somehow knew who I was. And complained about something related to her primary care doctor, and then gave me some feedback about her mom, who was an inpatient or is an inpatient in our acute rehab unit. And I remember after talking to her, thinking to myself, I'm so glad I was here in the cafeteria, right? Because if I was in my office, she never would have found her way to see me. So, you know, every Friday I do rounds on one of our nursing units and talk to patients. And even when I'm out and about in the community and home, I just enjoy talking to people and hearing about their experiences in healthcare and then relating them to how I can make a difference. I mean, it's why I wanted to do this from the very beginning. I wanted to be a hospital administrator since I was a junior in high school.
Really?
Yeah, I know. That's a little geeky. But
specifically the administrator piece?
Yeah, yeah. Well, not really.
I want a white lab coat, I want to be a doctor.
I actually wanted to be a firefighter paramedic.
Nice.
But I knew I wanted to go to college because I wanted to play lacrosse.
Smart.
I always had an ulterior motive. And then it was in my snowmobile accident. That was end of sports. So I ended up going to college, and my father was an accountant, and he wanted me to be a banker, and there was no way that was happening. So he said, study business. I don't care what you want to do. And so I realized that the combination of, you know, sort of riding around on an ambulance and business was running a hospital.
Yeah.
I ended up doing an internship my senior year in high school, or in college, I'm sorry. And then that's how I ended up at George Washington University. So it's been 40 years since then. So anyway, my point is...
So you wake up every day and you're living your dream job, literally.
No question.
How wonderful.
And it's not just a job. It's what I like to do and talk about and know that I play a role in, no matter how small. Just making sure that the woman that I spoke to today, her mom gets her shower every day.
I love that.
That was the issue.
Listening.
Yeah.
I actually think that's a really powerful piece. I think lots of people listen in the times they're supposed to, listen in the spaces that they're supposed to, like, oh, I'm in role now, and so I'm going to listen to these stakeholders, this group of people. But some of my favorite learning about what's happening in our community or what businesses need or where there's gaps in our local economy comes from, like, being fourth in line at the corner store and just listening.
Yeah.
That's my favorite version of staying grounded. It's not that different than what you just said.
Yeah. Whenever things get really crazy or difficult or frustrating, I go to the bedside. I just go to the bedside.
Yeah.
You know, and the patients, they make it real.
Oh, they'll tell you.
Oh, yeah.
As I recall from my 3 months in a different hospital system altogether, different reasons and all that jazz. But yeah, every once in a while someone would come in and ask me how I was doing. And I'm like, do you really want to know?
Right.
I haven't rolled over in.
Yeah. Right.
I'm only allowed to sit on my right side for 20 minutes a day. So looking back and leading forward is how we always like to end. What would you tell a young healthcare professional about how to build, lead, and thrive through crisis?
Well, not every day is a crisis.
Yeah.
Fortunately.
Thank goodness.
I guess one of the things I would say is, you know, be prepared for the unexpected, because things happen, you know, and a lot of the things that we've talked about today, nobody expected. And when that happens, be true to yourself. Just something that I believe in, whether it applies to everybody or not, is, you know, rely on your team, because you're probably surrounded with really good people, many of whom probably know better than you do. So when it comes to, you know, facing a challenge or a crisis, like I said, just be true to yourself, rely on your team. And that will see you through just about anything.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I think it is so easy to forget the rely on your team part, particularly in times of crisis.
Yeah.
Especially when leading. And
yeah. Well, a lot of times, you know, we think back on some of the things that we talked about today. I mean, where Central Maine Healthcare was at its best, I was nowhere to be found, you know?
Yeah.
I was in the back seat. And so that's when you can really feel good about being a leader, is when your team shines and you're able to stand in the back and watch.
My absolute favorite moments, and really hard to describe to other people, particularly that same team, of whom is amazing and remarkable and is well-positioned and well-skilled to do all the things, and then you try to tell them that. Like, I'm just standing here in awe of you doing your parts and doing them so beautifully, and then they get mad at you or embarrassed because you made him stand and be clapped at in a room full of people.
Yeah.
But it's my favorite. Those moments are my absolute genuine favorite moments.
Yeah.
Good advice. Anything you want to add?
Oh, gosh.
You could even ask your own question, too, if you want to.
Oh, yeah. I have really my own little podcast here. No, I think we covered it all. I appreciate your questions and the opportunity to join you and talk about Central Maine Healthcare and the communities that we serve, the challenges that we and our colleagues across the state of Maine and the country face, and some of the things that I believe that we should be thinking about, if not doing, to address those challenges. And hopefully this will catch on and we'll start talking more about solutions than challenges, and that the narrative has not yet shifted. And I look forward to the day that it does.
I'm here for that day too.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.